Well, the Wisconsin Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired has a number of services to help you or your family or your friends who have vision loss, and we're going to be talking about them with our guest today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our guest, Kristen Fontaine, is the Senior Rehabilitation Specialist. She has over 22 years experience, if I'm not mistaken, and she'll talk about some of the services provided, who qualifies. We can talk about White Cane Safety Day, and of course we can answer your questions or hear about your own experiences. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You can join in the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Kristen Fontaine, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Larry. I'm very excited and interested in sharing what we, the Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired, can do for people who have vision loss in Wisconsin. As you mentioned, I've been doing this for over 20 years and kind of got into it an interesting way that started with teaching and then counseling and just heard of an opening with the agency.
22 years ago or
yep,
so?
Yep, applied, exactly. And I always say that it was Katie Couric who I should thank for my job, because 2 days before I interviewed, I heard her talking about macular degeneration on the Today Show. And so when I did interview, that happened to be one of the questions, and I was able to channel that and kind of felt proud of myself and obviously got the job and have had the pleasure of working in the Madison region for the whole time I've been a rehab specialist.
And there are regions, obviously there are several regions in the state, right?
Right. Currently we have 9 people who cover the 72 counties of Wisconsin. And we do have 2 open positions, one in Milwaukee, one in Rhinelander, that we're hoping to fill very soon. We had a retirement and somebody else had left her position. Mm-hmm. So right now we have the 9 regions, but some of my coworkers in the northern part of the state are covering 6, 7, 8 counties.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. Our services are unique in that we are itinerant and we go into the home of the people who are experiencing vision loss or blindness and need help or kind of tips and pointers to get them through the day. You know, maybe they're just not doing things as easily as they did before they had vision loss.
So who's eligible? So is anyone that is...
Thanks for asking. Yeah. So basically, anybody who has a diagnosed vision loss that has impacted what they do on a daily basis. There is a 20 over 70 acuity that we like to have that bar. You know, it's not just somebody who needs glasses.
Right.
So it's usually a progressive vision loss or a degenerative vision loss. Sometimes it might be somebody who's been blind from birth, but they have a new situation. They've moved to a new location and they need to be acclimated to that area or need to have things tactilely marked in their home. So we can be called by anybody. A referral does not have to come from an eye doctor. It could be from a family member or a neighbor or, you know, somebody that is just, you know, knows the person with vision loss.
And so somebody, too, who may have been injured in an accident, lose an eye or something.
I have some recent cases that are, it's pretty traumatic that one day you're doing your job, you're raising your family, and your life is one way, and you have an accident, and then your life changes, and maybe you've regained your other faculties, but it's the vision that is the thing. Or sometimes stroke in older people, too, and that can happen. You know, it doesn't have
to. So stroke affects
It can affect the vision in that it puts pressure on the optic nerve, and that's permanent damage that doctors...
You can't fix it.
No.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, are your services free, or how does
they
that
are,
work?
They are. So we are funded by both the state and federal government. We get money from the federal government to help people who are 55 and older. But we have general purpose revenue funds for our agency through the state of Wisconsin to fund our program. The person that we go see, if they want, they can contribute because we do a complete assessment in the home. And when the person is eligible for services, they might need some help. Maybe it's a magnifier. Maybe it's better improved lighting. Maybe it's some kitchen gadgets. And if they can make a contribution, we say, yay, because our funds, we're one of those best kept secrets for state services because people don't know about us until somebody in the family has been affected oftentimes.
So the services are not only, for example, you going to somebody's home, but then maybe you identify that, oh, the lighting in here needs to be changed, and you can help in that area too.
Well, we do. The people that do what I do, sometimes we feel like Mary Poppins, or sometimes the clients will say, looks like you're moving in, because we have suitcases that we haul around full of stuff. And we come in and we assess the lighting and we show them different lights that are available, but also make recommendations where they can locally buy, say, improved lighting through, big box stores or sometimes craft stores. There's different, that sort of thing. So it's up to the person.
So what else is in those suitcases you got in there? What other kinds of things might we expect to see?
Yeah, well, our assessment, it generally takes about 2 hours to do our assessment.
So how's it start?
Walk in. Introduce, kind of like you do. We just kind of sit across from somebody and find out what they were doing before they had vision loss, what they're currently doing, what they'd like to be doing, and we'd see if there are adaptive equipment, aids and appliances, or training that can kind of help them cope with their vision loss better.
It's really interesting. So is there vocational training for you probably don't provide that, or do you?
That's a good, very good question. So in the state of Wisconsin, we don't have what's called cradle to grave services. We actually have three different agencies. So for a young person, they would want to contact the School for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Janesville. I think they call themselves the Center for the Blind now. Then for people who are still working, there's the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, and that, just like us, is by region, so there would be an office. And my agency is for anybody who is an adult, so we can see people as young as 18, and I think my oldest client to date has been 102.
Oh, my goodness me.
Yeah, yeah. So somebody who needs vocational help, then we would refer them to the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, commonly known as DVR.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they would provide the vocational training, do an assessment, set up a plan, help that person with vision loss, ideally. My agency, since we do see all adults, we focus more on the independent living. So we are focused on helping people remain independent in their homes and also matching them up with local resources. Or you mentioned support groups. That can be pretty impactful too. So there's a lot of information and it's changing rapidly because of technology.
And part of your job and a lot of people's job then is to keep up on that yourselves and make sure everybody else.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. So it's hard sometimes. We might get a call that says, my aunt would like one of those talking computers. It's like, a little education there. It's like, does your aunt currently use a computer? Well, no. So it's like, you don't take these leaps. A lot of people think if a person is blinded suddenly that the first thing they need is a dog. The dog guide. So we might give them resource information about dog guides. And in fact, most people, very few percentage of people actually do have a dog guide, but we can walk the person through why they may or may not want a dog guide, give them resources of the various agencies. We do have one local to Wisconsin, so we'd give out that information of where they can get dog guide information. Another thing is that they instantly think everybody needs to learn Braille. And Braille, obviously, it's the best form of communication. They still teach it at the Wisconsin Center. The kids learn Braille. It's primary for writing, reading, excuse me. But now with technology, there are apps, you know, so that's the big thing that we hear a lot now, you know, the phrase, there's an app for that. Well,
there's an app for a lot of things these days.
Exactly.
As it relates to
exactly.
This.
Exactly. Wow. Right. Yeah.
Kristen Fontaine, our guest today, she's a senior rehabilitation specialist for the State of Wisconsin Department of Health Services Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired. As we talk with her, maybe you've participated in one of the programs for the blind and visually impaired. Love to hear your experiences with that. Are you interested maybe in becoming a certified in blind rehabilitation? I think Kristen would love to hear from you about that as well. And other questions, give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at services for the blind or visually impaired today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Kristen Fontaine, senior rehabilitation specialist. She works in the Department of Health Services Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired. It's great to have her come by today. Certainly, if you have questions for her or maybe an experience to share, if you participated in one of the programs or have a question about it, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Kristen, we started just briefly talk about signs or how to know when to get a hold of something, you know, your office or talk to you or one of the other folks. What are some of those 10 signs or so that are out there?
Sure. So sometimes it might come from your doctor who says to you, there's really nothing more I can do. Your glasses, I've changed your glasses, but there isn't a change in your prescription that we're going to make that's going to make a difference. That, you know, especially if you're, say, if you're somebody who's macular degeneration. But if you haven't been diagnosed with a vision loss by a doctor, or if you've got a family member maybe that you're suspecting, things that you should watch for would be, say, if they start saying, oh, you know, like, what's that bruise on your arm? Well, I bumped into the door. I didn't see it. You know, or if they say, I tripped on something. I didn't see it. If they're kind of moving slower than they used to move and you're just kind of watching them and, you know, you think that they're not moving around their house or apartment like they used to. If you see them do a lot of groping and touching things along their path, that might be a sign. If they're squinting a lot more than they used to or tilting their head, or you see them, you know, doing that sort of thing. If they're saying, you know, there's just not enough light. There's just not enough light. I need better light. I need different light. This light is too blinding. So if they're holding books too close or too far away, that would be an obvious one. Something like if you notice that they're dropping food on their shirts more than they used to, and you know they're not noticing things, or they're not noticing things like stains or, you know, things like that. If they're describing that they're having trouble recognizing faces of people at church, or they go to the store and say, oh, I didn't even see that person, you know, those sorts of things, if they're saying that, if they're just kind of generally acting like they haven't seen this place before, or their familiarity is not there like it used to be. Those might be some of the signs. It's like, yeah, I think we better get you in to see the eye doctor. And we recommend people should have an eye exam at least once a year. There's some materials that say, twice or once every 2 years.
I go once a year,
Once a year should be, certain eye conditions, they may have you come in every 6 months. You know, it's up to the doctor what sort of things. So,
well, we have a number of people with questions for you, Kristen. So let's take some calls here. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Stella. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I wanted to know, I've been aware of for many years that there's some service in Wisconsin that provides audiobooks and players for to as a service to the blind. Is that something that you do?
Yes. Actually, we are authorized to enroll people in the Wisconsin Talking Book and Braille Library. Its funding comes from the Library of Congress. Our books in Wisconsin are housed at a library in Milwaukee. It's a fantastic program. I know I once had a lady who was 92, still lived at home, and she said, yep, if it wasn't for Talking Books, I don't know that I'd get up in the morning, but I get up in the morning and I listen to my Talking Books. And that is a free service. They send you their tape player. They look like an audio cassette.
Yeah.
But they're not. They're actually digital. And it's completely free. It all goes through the mail. So you listen to the book, you send it back, and they get you more books. And it's a wonderful program. And the staff there is very knowledgeable and helpful in getting books. And for people who don't want that, through their system, there's a new way to get the books. It's called BARD, which is Braille and Audio Recording Download. So you can listen to books on your cell phone or your iPad, and it's a wonderful program.
So how does so BARD is for that one, for example, if you type that in or get somebody to type that in, a search engine that's going to pop up?
BARD is, and you have to have a password. So it looks like you download that app, but you actually have to go through the regional library to get a password and to be set up as a member who can download those books for free. And of course they're expanding their library all the time. So it's a wonderful program.
And the other program, how do you get to the first you talked about through the Library of Congress and so forth?
So any of our staff throughout the state, and there are other people who are authorized to sign people up, maybe in a nursing home or social work or something. But we are one of the people that the Wisconsin Talking Book and Braille Library has signed people up for the program. So
there you go, Stella. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it. I want to give Barb in Madison a chance to join in. Hi, Barb.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hi, Kristen. So I just want to give a positive shout out to the council. They're wonderful. My husband, who had a brain tumor and had poor vision anyway, then had an accident and lost it all at age 69. And I actually had to call the council in Madison, which is a phenomenal group of people, to come out to rehab and teach the people at rehab how to deal with blind people. They had no idea. So that was our introduction, and Jean Kelscher, who works there, is phenomenal. So I really, Kristen, would like you to talk. I know you just talked about the talking books. There's also Victor Reader that people may not be aware of, which is a wonderful thing. My husband listens to the Washington Post and New York Times daily. I don't know how he'd deal without it. But the other thing is the camp that he goes to in the summer. And I know you're involved with that in some regard, and it's also wonderful. The camp he went to this past summer allowed him to kayak and play some kind of little frisbee golf game or something. And it was a really good thing to make him feel like he hadn't lost everything in his life. So could you address some of those activities that people could get involved in? Because what I see is people becoming isolated, particularly those older adults that lose their vision.
Yeah, Barb, thank you so much for calling. I think she was probably talking about the Lions camps.
She was. Hi, Barb. Yes, so you're bringing up topics that I was hoping to get to. So the Wisconsin Council of the Blind is a wonderful organization. I think they just had their 65th year, maybe a year ago, that they have been helping people and empowering people who are blind or have low vision. And they are on Williamson Street right here in Madison. And they've got a very dedicated staff that helps people with vision loss. They have somebody specifically to do technology, low vision. They also do the rehabilitation teaching that our staff does. It's funny because sometimes we'll share a booth at a health fair and people will say, wait, are you guys in cahoots? And we'll say, no. They are a very good partner of ours, and they do have the store where people can walk in and purchase low vision aids, adaptive equipment, and they're just a great resource. They do mostly what they do is probably an hour radius of Madison, but I know they do a lot of outreach things. They do such things as the dining out in the dark. They did recently a thing for bird calls by ear, and so they're trying to do some activities locally. So if you haven't already, get on their website and check out the events and the training and the things that they offer.
And the Lions camps?
Lions camps. Now, we actually started being more involved with Lions camps because that is in Rosholt, Wisconsin. And they have 150 campers age from starting again at 18 to, I think they have people in their 80s, and they will go up for a week in the summer, and it's a beautiful camp sponsored by the Lions. And like Barb said, they have all the recreational type activities that you would have as a, you know, like when you were a kid. But our staff, the nine of us, will go there and we teach mini courses on maybe cooking or technology or, and these are all optional things, but people are happy to sign up. We had a very interested bunch about wanting to know about the Alexa this year, about air fryers. I think we did yoga in the past. You know, so it's kind of things that the camp doesn't offer, but that we can offer. And then this Sunday, our whole staff is headed there because their summer camp programs are done, but we offer a four-day training for people. Usually it's people new to vision loss, or maybe they have a different change in their situation.
Yeah.
But we go up on a Sunday night, stay Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and it's kind of like a schedule like you're back in junior high. So first hour, you'd have communications, and you might have talking about blindness, cooking class, orientation and mobility, technology, and I'm going to forget the sixth one.
Well, that's all right. People have got the idea. How would they find out more about?
So by calling our office, and I should really get this out here too, we have number, because think about our nine staff, we're out driving and seeing people in their homes. We're often not in our offices, so catching us in the office is a treat. But you can always call our number, toll-free number, which do people use that anymore, toll-free?
Yeah.
1-888-879-0017. Leave a message. Be sure and let us know which county you're calling from. And one of our trained staff will get back to you just as soon as they get back to their office and set up an appointment.
So 1-888-879-0017.
Thanks. There he is.
All right. There we go. And Barb, thank you. I want to give Wayne and Marshall, or Marshfield, I'm sorry, a chance to join in. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning. I'm glad to hear that the rehabilitation teaching program is alive and well. I was a rehabilitation teacher from the Wausau office for 17 years, and I retired in 96, so we didn't cross paths, Kristen.
No, I was going to say, I started in 97, so you would have been working with my Cole, the guy who preceded me, I guess I would say, Jerry Beaver.
Yep.
And that is back when I think we had 14 rehab specialists. Now we're down to 11. But it's good to talk to you, Wayne.
Yeah, it's a wonderful program, and I can't emphasize it enough, because the rehab teachers can plug people into all these different resources. And just going to visit a new client and showing them, there have been times when, you know, I allowed an hour, and it's gotten to be 2.5, and they just are so full of questions. You mean there's something that can help me do this? And they would get excited, and of course we as teachers would be excited. And a few times I had a call some clients down the road and say, I'm not going to get there today.
That sounds very familiar.
Wayne, thank you so much. Well, thank you so much for your service and then thank you very much for your call as well. Helpful people kind of remind me of, you're amongst the group like librarians and some other folks who just provide these wonderful services. Don in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Don.
Hi, Kristen. Thank you for taking my call. I previously also worked in the same field as the previous caller, Wayne, and with Kristen. And I just wonder if you would make a comment or two about the importance of and the availability of support groups for people who have low vision or are blind. And then also if you could comment on that really weird condition that sometimes accompanies people who have macular degeneration called Charles Bonnet syndrome about hallucinations. I'll hang up and take the call off line then.
All right. Thank you very much, Don, for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Don. Yes, support groups are wonderful. They, throughout the state, you can check and see if there may be a support group in your area. Our office does support the groups that meet. Usually the most successful ones meet at like a congregate meal site, so there's going to be transportation. That kind of is one of the things about support groups, is getting the people there because they don't drive.
Sure.
But if the congregate meal sites have transportation, then the people can get there, come for the support group, and stay for lunch. And that's wonderful, because somebody mentioned earlier, maybe it was Barb, about the social isolation aspect. So coming to a support group gets you out of the house. You get to be with other people who are somewhat in the same boat. There are different types of support groups in terms of how they're set up. Some of them always have a speaker who might be an expert on the mail, or the talking book people
sure.
might come. You know that. But I think what is really valuable is when the people who attend just kind of compare their stories with one another, supportive, and you say, you know, how do you tell your shampoo apart from your cream rinse? You know, something simple like that. Or gee, which app? We talked before about, you know, apps and stuff. I know I have a support group that I facilitate in Evansville, Wisconsin. And, you know, we have somebody who's in his 40s who's been very patient trying to teach somebody in her 80s how to better use her iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the benefits of support groups. And I think the bonding thing that happens with support groups are wonderful. And our office would have resource information. I know Hadley, School for the Blind, which Don is very familiar with, has information about support groups and setting up support groups. And I think the toughest thing about support groups is keeping them going. Keeping the interest there, having a phone tree reminding people that it's happening and that sort of thing. And again, because of the transportation issues, that can be a
problem
tough.
Sometime. Well, what about, Don mentioned Charles Bonnet syndrome.
Charles Bonnet syndrome is named after the person who kind of saw a collection of symptoms for people. Usually it's women. It's who have advanced vision loss. And it really is the brain and the eyes trying to make sense of the input that they're getting. So they're seeing something, but it's misinformation. So people have been reported to say they saw apartment buildings or animals. I had somebody who said she saw farm animals. What's interesting about it is people who are isolated tend to get this more, but they're afraid to tell their family because they don't. Mm. Their family thinks, oh, they're, you know, grandma's
going crazy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So they're afraid to mention these symptoms. And, you know, sometimes it could be scary things like bugs or spiders or something. And there's really no cure for it. You just have to recognize that it happens and deal with it. You know, it might be, happen at different times of day. There's not a medication or anything, but you have to know that it's there. Do some relaxation things, close your eyes, because I think knowing that it's there, it kind of helps people cope with that. But it's rare, but I have heard about,
rare, but there.
Yeah, rare, but there. There you go, Larry.
Diana in Presque Isle, we'll go to you now. Hi, Diana.
Hi there. My question is just one of curiosity. Earlier you were mentioning the availability of audiobooks or books for download. And my question is there some kind of a program or some kind of availability that adapts iPads or iPhones for use by people with a vision impairment or blindness? How would one use one of those devices?
That's a good question, Diana. So the Apple products have built-in accessibility features. It's not easy to learn, but it's called VoiceOver. So my coworkers and other people who go to Blind Camp for something, they're on their phones all the time, just like other people, but they use something called VoiceOver, which reads what's on the screen. There's a free app, which we want to share that one.
Yeah.
It's called NVDA, or Non-Visual Desktop Access. It was invented by some blind guys in Australia who thought computers should be accessible to everybody. So they invented this app that is free, and it is a screen reader app that helps people with vision loss be able to see. There are a number of other screen reader programs. For computer programs, kind of the gold standards is a program called JAWS. That has a learning curve, but, you know, and it's not always accessible with all programs, but these are things that make the visually impaired and blind world so open to people with, you know, being able to access computer technology and, you know, do those things that other people do.
Diana, does that help out?
Yeah, sounds wonderful.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, I mentioned at the start of the show that in October we have White Cane Day, and I do want to get that in before we...
Right. White Cane Day is every year, the 15th of October. The governor will come out with a proclamation, and it's actually across the whole United States, not just in Wisconsin. And it really is to bring awareness to people who are using a white cane or a dog guide. And I'll read the white cane law. So in Wisconsin, an operator of a vehicle shall stop the vehicle before approaching closer than 10 feet to a pedestrian who is carrying a cane or a walking stick, which is white in color or white trimmed with red, and which is held in an extended or raised position, or is using a dog guide, and shall take such precautions as may be necessary to avoid accident or injury to the pedestrian. So there's a key part of that, Larry.
Yeah.
It says complete stop. We did a sting a few years back, and one we did right in front of the Wisconsin Council on Williamson Street, which is a very busy intersection. And I'm so proud to say that they've just recently installed an audible light crossing thing.
Yes.
I mean, and that intersection had a big sign above that said, you know, must stop for pedestrians. And we're not talking blind. We're just talking for people. Once they've committed to cross that street, you're supposed to stop. I can't tell you how many warnings they issued that day. And I remember when we did it in another city, the little old lady who was driving said, "Well, I slowed down," and another said, "Well, I swerved." And it's like, no, you're supposed to come to a complete stop. And when I was at a support group once talking about White Cane Day, somebody said, "Well, wait a minute, you can get a ticket on October 15th if you don't stop." It's like, no, the law is every day. But we just kind of recognize it on the 15th to bring awareness. So public service announcement, you see one of those, you're going to want to come to a complete stop and give them 10 foot of clearance so that you don't get a warning or a ticket.
You know, we've talked a little bit about smartphones. There's actually a smart cane out there, isn't there? A cane that I think it's from a company called WeWalk.
So that
uses GPS.
Okay, so some of that technology hasn't reached everybody yet, and we mentioned earlier a little bit about that. There's a shortage of certified people, so an orientation and mobility instructors in the state of Wisconsin. So to have that particular cane, I think you need specialized training, and I am not aware of somebody who does that. So we're hoping that...
It'd be a really cool thing to have, though.
Yeah, yeah. There are standalone GPS units. There's somebody mentioned the Victor program, mm-hmm. and I think there's the GPS, there's a Victor Trek, which is designed for blind people, and it helps them navigate. So navigation is something that... You know, again, getting back to that social isolation, the more you can get about independently and use whatever tools you have, learn to use a white cane, use electronics for navigation, get orientation and mobility training, you might not be so inclined to stay home and be so isolated.
Is there, you've talked about the need for trained people. What kind of training do you need to in order to get into this?
So I kind of was grandfathered in with a master's in guidance and counseling. There are other people who are certified in rehab teaching, low vision, orientation and mobility, and now there's a new one, which is assistive technology, which is in demand. The state of Wisconsin does not have a school that certifies people in those programs. So people generally go to Northern Illinois University or Western Michigan. We had some of our staff who took online training through University of Little Rock in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be
why. So you can even get the training online.
Yeah, some of it.
Some of it, not all of it.
Yeah.
But at least Northern Illinois is close.
Yeah, right. It's a beyond a bachelor's, so it could be a master's program or a certification-only program.
So you could have a bachelor's in probably most anything if you went on for the additional.
You could. And there's definitely a need for it. Most of the orientation and mobility teachers in Wisconsin are teaching in the schools, either at larger schools like Madison would have their own, or through CESA programs throughout the state.
Well, this has been a real pleasure talking with you today, Kristen. I hope we have a chance to do this again.
A lot of great services.
And thank you so much for all your service over 22 years. That's a long time.
Well, you know, our staff is so dedicated. I think our average, we just got the new guy, so we're going to not count his time. But I think I looked once and our average years, I think it's like 16 years. So, and Wayne, who called earlier, mentioned that he was 17. I know my predecessor was 20. And so it's like,
so once you get in, you want to stay.
I guess so.
Well, it takes a special person to do it, Kristen. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Kristen Fontaine, Senior Rehabilitation Specialist for the State of Wisconsin Department of Health Services Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired. It was great talking with her today. And, you know, we're going to keep on the eye train here a little bit as we turn our attention to avoiding eye injuries and talking about eyeglasses and other eye devices that can help prevent many eye injuries. Jim LaLuzerne coming up as our next guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network.